Welcome to another edition of the Volunteer State. I'm Blake Topmeyer with John Adams, the Knoxville News Sentinel. John and I have an unexpected weekend off thanks to the SEC, and so does Jeremy Pruitt and his Vols. The SEC rearranging this weekend's schedule, and best I can tell, the SEC has really designated Missouri as a power broker in the conference because it has postponed indefinitely a rivalry game between Tennessee and Vanderbilt that's been played either 113 or 114 times, depending on which program you ask, in favor of making sure this Missouri versus Vanderbilt game gets in. How about that? Missouri's kind of flexing on the rest of the conference.
Yeah, once again, I mean, and how many times has Missouri actually made its mark in this conference? Usually you just forget about it, but it's a player now. I kind of think it looks as though maybe the SEC is orchestrating this with the national championship playoff in mind. You think about move the Texas A&M game to December 19th. Tennessee and Texas A&M will play on the 19th. UT and Vanderbilt will play on the 12th. That gives A&M a chance to show off for the selection committee on the same day you're having conference championships, because that's the best case scenario for the SEC, is get two teams in there. It would be A&M and Alabama. I think that's a fair assessment. Tennessee is not in the playoff picture. I think we've made that clear, haven't we? And
I think that's clear. Yeah.
However, I am really disappointed. I was looking forward to this Tennessee-Vanderbilt game. Vanderbilt is better than it was earlier in the year. Tennessee is, as Jeremy Pruitt pointed out, the offense perked up, scored 17 points last week in the loss to Auburn, and gained more yards, which I think is very significant. So we were going into a game where both teams sort of on an upswing, and then you have a combined record of 2-12, which would be the worst combined record in the history of the series. As you said, it's been going on for a while. So I thought that was quite a matchup, and I was very disappointed when I heard yesterday that the game had been postponed.
Yeah, if I'm Jeremy Pruitt, I might try to make sure that the game never gets played. A loss to Vanderbilt could seal his fate here. So the way you make sure you don't lose to Vanderbilt is not worry about beating Vanderbilt. Just make sure you never play Vanderbilt. Can't lose to Vanderbilt if you don't play him.
Okay, well, that's the risk. The reward is not that great. You win and you've got three victories. Put that on your resume and see what it gets you. Also, does Tennessee really want to play Florida? Does Tennessee really need for that game to happen? I mean, that's a possible 50-point game, unless Florida's just indifferent to the whole thing. My guess is Tennessee could call in sick for that one. So that gives you an open day, December 5th. It gives you a lot of time to get ready for Vanderbilt, which has had to play Missouri. Maybe it'll work in another game. So maybe a beat-up Vanderbilt team will go against a refreshed Tennessee team that's willing to take the chance of playing Vanderbilt. So that, to me, would be a best-case scenario for Tennessee.
And now, at this point, we don't really know Tennessee's schedule. We know Tennessee's still scheduled to play Florida next week. The SEC hasn't said exactly where that Vanderbilt's going to fall. There's been speculation, as you noted, John, that it'll actually come on the 12th and then save that game for Texas A&M on the 19th. Either way, whichever order those games come, whether it's A&M Vanderbilt or Vanderbilt A&M, it means Tennessee could be playing the appetizer on December 19th for the SEC championship. Let's say it's Tennessee Vanderbilt. Let's say the SEC sticks with the plan of playing the A&M game on the 12th, and you have Tennessee and Vanderbilt as like a noon appetizer for the SEC championship. I mean, wouldn't that be some compelling television?
The best and worst of SEC football. You'd kind of like to get a West team in there, but I think Tennessee Vanderbilt would be perfect. And I think people would tune in to watch that. I think there would be a morbid curiosity about it.
It could be the Fire'em Bowl. You know, Derek Mason losing, show him out of town.
Loser leave state.
Yes, there you go. And so let's dive a little bit more into that, John, because the upside for Jeremy Pruitt this week is that he can't lose to Vanderbilt. The downside is, without an opportunity to end this five-game losing streak, the hot seat conversation is going to go nowhere. It's still at the top of most people's minds. I mean, the two storylines right now for Tennessee football are, why hasn't there been a quarterback change, and is Jeremy Pruitt still going to be the coach in 2021? And we're going to dive into that latter conversation. What's the case for bringing Pruitt back next season? He's 32 games into his tenure. He's 15-17 up to this point, 5-7 year one, 8-5 year two, finished on the winning streak, had losses though to Georgia State and BYU. And now the program's on its first five-game losing streak since 1988. And I know the holdouts there, that the Pruitt defenders would say, well, it's a conference-only schedule. You've got to point that out. There's no non-conference games in there to break up that losing streak. But I would point out, a non-conference game against Georgia State or BYU mixed in this mix might not have broken up that losing streak anyway. So it is what it is. It's a five-game losing streak, first one since 1988. So what is the argument at this juncture for another season under Jeremy Pruitt?
First of all, you mentioned BYU. Thankfully for Tennessee, it played BYU last season. I know it lost, but this BYU team, I've watched it several times, and that passing game, I kind of think it would click against Tennessee's defense. So you want to make a case for Jeremy Pruitt. The first thing you say is continuity. Tennessee needs continuity. It can't just keep firing coaches. I don't subscribe to this theory, but you asked me to make a case, so that's what I'll do. Yeah, you can't just keep firing coaches. You let a guy stick around. I don't know. What's the time limit? 7 or 8 years? Give him longer. Butch had 5 years. So let's give Jeremy Pruitt 6 seasons to turn this around. That's fair. And so you would be good. Well, I don't want to do the math on that. That would take too long for me to figure that out. So I'll just go with 6 years, give Jeremy Pruitt 6 years. The other thing is that I don't think this really, this doesn't, if you had a jury of fans, I don't think this would appeal to a fan jury. They don't want to hear about money. They just don't want to hear that. But that's what you say. And that's the main reason for keeping him. There's no question. We wouldn't even be having this conversation if it weren't about money. Tennessee has, what is it, $10 million in its reserve fund. So that wouldn't pay off Jeremy Pruitt. Now, you do it by the month, though. Anyway, that's the main reason for not firing him. But what I wonder is, would things be any better next year if money is the issue? I mean, is it not? The buyout won't be reduced that dramatically by next year. What would it be next year about?
Assuming you don't give contract extensions to Jim Chaney or Derek Ansley and say you got a coach in the final year of your contract, their buyout would come off the books because they'd be in the final year of their contract. Pruitt's buyout would come down by, again, without having the calculator in front of me, it would come down by about $2.5 million. So all told, you know, your buyout could be coming down for Pruitt, it's couple million for the whole staff. If you don't give Ansley and Chaney contract extensions, and heaven forbid make someone work in the final year of their contract without an extension, which is unheard of in college athletics, for whatever reason, you know, you could whittle down their buyout because they'd be in the final year of their contract next year. So it would come down a little bit. Of course, you got to hire some new coaches too, probably, and they're probably not going to come in the door without two-year contracts, so that might tick it up a little bit. But overall, I could see the buyout for this staff coming down about $4 or $5 million maybe next season.
Okay, well, you reduce the buyout for Pruitt. I mean, he gets down to around $11 million mark. If you get him to that, and you've got $10 million, you start a GoFundMe account and try and get the rest of it, and you're good. So yeah, so that's a point. Another reason for keeping him is, go back to the first of the season. You can say that COVID-19, this is just an aberration, this entire season. he began the season on a 6-game winning streak, and COVID hit in the off season. Everything's askew. Maybe that's a factor in this. You can use that and say, all bets are off. It was just an odd season. You can't really count it. You know, you aren't counting it for players. So let's don't count it for coaches. Players can get another year of eligibility. This year doesn't count, so don't count it for coaches. So those would be, I think, my top three reasons.
You think Dan Mullen's counting this season? I think Nick Saban's counting this season? Are they not counting it?
I think Nick Saban counts every second of football-related time. Dan Mullen, yeah, you're right. He's counting it. Ohio State's counting it. Mm. Notre Dame's counting it in a big way. That's a diversion. You're talking about elite powerhouse programs.
You think Arkansas is counting this season?
Okay. All right. I'll buy that one. You got me on that. Well, what about you think South Carolina's counting this season? You think
they fired their coach. Apparently they think it counts.
So you're kind of shooting holes in my really lame defense. I don't know. A judge might dismiss this case. I did the best I could. I'm a public defender.
I'm going to give you some more time to think about it, John. We'll try to come up with a few more reasons. So we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Adam for Coors Light. You know, life today is kind of a lot. We're always forced to be on. But every now and then, it's important to just stop. Crack open a Mountain Cold Coors Light and chill out. So when you choose to turn off, choose the one beer that's literally made to chill, Coors Light. Coors Light is brewed with a 3-step cold process. It's cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. The mountains on Coors Light cold activated bottles and cans turn blue when chilled to perfection. When your game is on this weekend, or any game for that matter, make sure your refrigerator is stocked up with the one beer that's made to chill, Coors Light. When life has got you on the go, 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 take a minute, relax, and enjoy a cold Coors Light. You can even have Coors Light delivered to your door by going to get.coorslight.com. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
All right, John, we're going to continue diving into this case for keeping Jeremy Pruitt. Gave you a little more time to think. I want to continue on the close the buyout discussion, though, because I want to continue to probe reasons that maybe beyond the obvious, the buyout. But a final thought on the buyout. We've talked about the money, but I think you fairly pointed out that it's not like if Tennessee were to fire Jeremy Pruitt tomorrow, they'd have to hand over $13 million in a bag at that moment. It wouldn't be like that. His contract runs through January 31st, 2026, if you can believe that. And so they would be issuing buyout payments to Pruitt through the duration of that deal. So you can spread them out. The SEC is going to be due for a new, more lucrative, is the belief, television contract here in the coming years. And so that could lead to a better financial windfall for athletic departments. So if you're looking for a rationalization to pay this buyout, I think Tennessee could find, you could look at it either way. You could find a rationalization to say you shouldn't fire a coach and pay all that severance money in a pandemic year where everybody in the athletic department making over $50,000 is taking a pay cut. I certainly see that rationalization. On the other hand, I think you could make the case of, well, hey, this buyout can be paid out over the course of 5 years. Conference distribution is going to be going up in that time, so no big deal. So that's my final thoughts on the buyout.
Well, Tennessee is still paying Butch Jones.
Yeah. Could be paying two head former head coaches at once. How about that?
I should point out, Derek Dooley is off the payroll on a positive note. These things eventually do end. Here's another possibility. What about, since we're still talking about, what about if you just, if Tennessee sued Butch Jones for not trying harder to get a real job?
Well, I think that ship has sailed. They got swindled there and didn't put up much.
Boy, did they ever. Okay, let's get away from the bow. Forget the money. It's not about the money.
Yeah, we're forgetting the money and putting forward other cases for keeping Jeremy Pruitt? You mentioned continuity and needing to give someone more than three seasons being an argument. You mentioned maybe this season shouldn't be considered really a real season. I like the first argument better than the second, as I think you could tell. But I think maybe the best argument, I'm going to see what you think of this, John, for keeping Pruitt is actually recruiting. To me, that's the best argument for keeping Pruitt. I know Tennessee right now isn't lighting the world on fire with its recruiting class for 2021. It started off really strong, getting all those guys in the boat early. But as your more traditional powers have piled up 4 and 5 stars, Tennessee has slipped in the ranks. But nonetheless, at this juncture, Tennessee still ranks 11th. And so let's say they hang on. Let's put it at 12. Well, let's say they get passed by one more team, but they can hang on to 12. You know, I think that's still a case to be made that you want to finish out this recruiting class, give him another solid class to stack. Because I think if you make a coaching change, I mean, the calendar's running pretty short on that right now. South Carolina got the ball rolling early, and I think they're going to give themselves a chance to have a coach before the early signing period. But timing's running out here for Tennessee to make a move, have a new coach in place by the early signing period. And so, you know, what becomes of this class if you don't have a head coach for the December signing period? I mean, Tennessee might still be playing football after the early signing period. As it stands now, to get all their games in this season, they're going to have to play on December 19th, which comes after the early signing period is over. So if you were to wait till the end of the season to make a move on Pruitt, signing period's already going to be come and gone. And how many guys are you going to have to let out of their letters of intent if you make a coaching change? So to me, the best argument for keeping Pruitt might be recruiting. What do you think about that?
Well, I've been through a lot of these coaching changes at Tennessee, and we've had a lot of different coaches coming and going. Tennessee always recruits pretty well. So I don't think it matters. I still think Tennessee will have a top 20 class, even if it makes a coaching change. And I don't think there's a huge difference between 12 and 20. Also, a way to manage that, if you do want to fire him, I'm attacking your case now. Mm-hmm. You don't fire him until after signing date. So you go ahead and set that early signing date and sign these guys.
And then give them the option to come out of their letters of intent if they choose to.
Yeah.
If you don't, that would be about as heavily criticized as you could have something. If you kind of play the bait and switch and you don't let them out of their letters of intent,
well,
you're just going to take a beating there.
Yeah, I see that. But I think it would make it harder. I think you would lose fewer players if you did it that way. And also, you could say, well, what the heck? We're not worried about criticism. We're getting criticized plenty anyway. We're trying to win football games. It doesn't always look that way, but we're trying. And so we'll get these guys in here, and then we'll roll with them.
They sign on December 16th. They hit the transfer portal on Christmas Day.
Well, you bring up another point when you say that, and if we're trying to make a case for keeping Jeremy Pruitt, is you have a better chance of turning things around with transfers. You get a transfer quarterback in here. So you could say, well, Jeremy Pruitt, he can go at it. It's not just his recruiting class. He could have a top, use your point, we'll say a top 12 recruiting class, and then enhance it with transfers. And so also you're welcoming back all your seniors. They can come back and play. It's not as though a lot of these guys are going back to the NFL and they're familiar. Don't be rolling your eyes around. I'm making a case for him. So there's going to be even more continuity. And it's going to be one big happy family going into the 21 season and playing a lighter schedule. So let's keep the coach, keep the seniors, keep a bunch of guys, add some transfers and bring in that top 12 recruiting class. And kind of like Athletic Director Philip Fulmer said last spring, we're getting ready to kick around some people. You're not – things are about to change. Didn't he say something like that?
He said the Vols are back, and it's not going to be long before they're taking a bite out of
I thought it was
everybody's
too,
backside. Yes.
Yeah, it was a little too crude, but yeah, you do the best you can.
Well, you make a good point, John, in that, you know, with all the seniors coming back, I think we've perhaps gone too long into the podcast without talking about the impact that guys like Jaquan Blakely coming back for a sixth season, if he decides to come back and not go to the NFL. You mentioned just how useful that could be for Tennessee to have all the senior class coming back.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Yeah, Blakely, high producer like him. Darrell Middleton, another high producer.
Think how good that O-line could be with a Brandon Kennedy could come back for what is like its 11th season. And you get maybe you could talk Trey Smith out of going pro. He hadn't had a great year. Thought he played better against Auburn. Cade Mays might want to stick around. He's just been here one season, play more with his brother. A lot of depth in the O-line, defensive line. Get those guys coming back and might get a couple of sacks next season. Yeah, I think that's something to point to. It's just a numbers game. See, look at it this way. Alabama and Georgia, I mean, they're not even going to get their juniors to come back. Those guys are off to the NFL. Where are Tennessee guys going? They might as well start working on advanced degrees. I mean, you can come out of this with a PhD if you play it right. So, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up.
Alabama's going to be losing juniors and seniors. Tennessee's going to be returning Jaquan Blakely.
Yeah, it's and they'll have that pass rush going after Alabama's Bryce Young next year. He doesn't look that bad, does he, as a freshman backup? You think he might be starting in a lot of places? It's
good luck going up against a defensive line full of six-year seniors at Tennessee. Any other arguments that you see here? We've made our case here. What's the best one? I've poked holes, I think, in that this season doesn't count. You came right back at me, I think, pretty successfully there. I'm going to tip my cap to you on poking holes in my recruiting argument because new coach or not new coach, it seems like Tennessee always – you're right. It seems like Tennessee always finishes in the top 20 in recruiting. I think our bit there on the seniors coming back maybe has run its course. And so we're left with maybe the best case for keeping Pruitt being A, the buyout, and B, continuity and trying to show some patience, trying to, you know, give a coach at least four seasons, which at least three traditional seasons plus a pandemic year, making the case that continuity is the way to go.
Yeah, one other thing. I mean, Jeremy Pruitt, remember, is a first-time head coach. He's never been through this. And I think so he's learning as he goes. And maybe he'll take something away from this season, the adversity of it, and be a better coach because of it.
You know, and really, to me, John, so much of this, too, comes down to how does this team look in the assuming it gets to play three more games? I mean, I thought, and I know this is probably kind of a loser's argument, but I thought Tennessee played its best game against Auburn since
Missouri. Yes, I agree.
And I know that's the type of thing losing teams say, well, played really well, if not for this.
Yeah, the other thing you said, 10 guys on offense did the right thing, but one guy didn't, and that sabotaged the play.
Oh, yes.
I think that probably happened on that interception that Smoke Monday burned them with.
So there was some improvement, albeit not on the win-loss decision, but Tennessee played better against Auburn than it had played in recent weeks. Mm-hmm. So if they could keep stacking improved performances, you know, show some competitiveness against Florida, be competitive against A&M, beat Vanderbilt, assuming all three of these games get played, to me, maybe that's the best argument, is the one not yet made. If Pruitt can make that case that, hey, this was a miserable stretch in the middle of the season, but close the year playing much better, take that into the offseason, it was a bad season, you can't spin it any other way, bad season, but close the year playing much better, maybe that's the best case that could be made, is what's remaining to be seen here in these final three games.
You're right, though. That's the case that losing teams always make. They're always working to get better, even though you might not see the result on the scoreboard. And as I pointed out earlier, Tennessee had more yards last Saturday. So maybe hang your hat on that. And, I think if you – okay, Florida. Let's take Florida for an example. The big three, Georgia, Florida. No, let's not even count the other two, Georgia and Alabama. Just look at Florida. Florida's beaten Tennessee during the Jeremy Pruitt era. They've beaten Jeremy Pruitt by 47-21, as I recall, in 2018, 26 points. Beat him last year 34-3, 31 points. So that's, 57 points. That's an average of 28.5 points a game. So let's just say Tennessee only loses to Florida by 24 points. You're right there. You've got something to work with. You're saying, look, we're closing the gap on the Gators. And that's not, you know, that's not hyperbole. That's just a fact. We played them a 24-point game, a three-score game, a few plays gone a different way. There weren't a couple of breakdowns in the secondary. Game would have been different. So, yeah, I think that's how you sell it. And then the idea of playing, the possibility you play two top 10 teams in the last three games, if you're competitive against them, I mean, that's a lot to ask of any team. A two-win team goes in there. It keeps playing hard. That shows they're still playing for their coach. They want to keep their coach. They're getting better, closing the gap on Florida, playing hard, more competitive against nationally ranked teams. Let's say they come within 20 points at Texas A&M. You've got something to hang your hat on there, and then you beat Vanderbilt, an improving Vanderbilt team. Not the team that was getting hammered 41-7 by South Carolina, 41-7 by LSU. Even better, let's make this. Let's say you are competitive against Florida and Texas A&M, and you just flat blow out Vanderbilt. I mean, Vanderbilt got blown out by South Carolina. They're playing with a backup offensive line. And I think they've lost something like 10 starters because of COVID, opt-outs, I don't want to play football anymore, those kind of things. So I think that's a really valid case.
It's a season you can hang your hat on, indeed. John, enjoy the weekend off, and we'll be back to discuss more next week. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Volunteer State.